Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today, both myself and my co-host here. We are financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. Come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And if you'd like to join the program, I'd love to take your call and have you be part of our show. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Yes.
Love to have you on the phone. It looks like, from the markets are kind of back up. You know, I saw a study, when I'm going to hit the calls here in a minute. It was a report of how much money left the equity markets, equity funds, net sellers, people pulling out in this month of December. It's like...
In the month of December.
Correct, when things were down.
Yeah.
You know... Sell low. I mean, it's classic. Why would you sell when things are down?
You know, Scott, I was thinking about on the drive-in this morning, I was thinking about market timing and why it doesn't work and how my own emotions over the last 12 years were 100% wrong. Oh, 12 years, 12 months were 100% wrong as to how I thought the market would go. Fortunately,
you separate your emotions from.
Yes.
It's funny, Pat, because sometimes people say, Scott, what do you think the market's going to do? And I said, well, let me preface this. What I think and how I act are going to be two different things.
I have never heard you say that, but it's because you think about the last 12 months, right? What happened with the division in political division, right? Brexit over and over and over and over. No one knows how that's going to end.
China tariffs, China slowing, global market slowing. ECB is still having struggles.
Interest rates, right? What was coming down on the tech stocks, all the political ramification. Anyway, just so I thought about it on the way
in. And here was the start of the year. It's pretty...
It's great. So
here's, I mean, the bottom line is
how you act should be two different things.
It's funny. I had a meeting with some folks on our investment team this last week. And over the long term, the more you have an equity stocks, the better off you're going to do. Why? Because historically... That's all we can really base things on. That has produced the highest return. If you go over long periods of time, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, great returns over a long period of time. Short term, it's anyone's guess, which is why most financial advisors talk about if long-term perspective, only have money in long-term investments that can be there for the long term and have as much as you can emotionally stomach.
Correct.
And that's kind of what it,
and recognize that you people are emotional beings.
And the greatest danger to your portfolio is not the external markets; it's your own emotional reaction to those.
And investment advisors are selling you index annuities and non-traded REITs.
Have you ever seen them work out well?
Never.
Have you? I'm not actually. I've never seen either of those work out well.
Never. Ah. Anecdotally, I heard about a REIT working once.
Okay. Anecdotally.
From an advisor, by the way, that sold REITs.
All right. Anyway, let's take some calls here. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-242-6766 is the numeric number. We're starting off in Colorado with Sean. Sean, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey guys, how's it going? Just started listening to your program a couple weeks ago and thought I'd give you a call and run a few questions by you.
A couple weeks ago? We've been doing this program 23 years. Anyway, welcome to the program, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. What can we do for you?
Thanks a lot. Well, hey, you know, I was just wondering if you have some advice for me and my wife. We both have careers. We make about $145,000 a year. We live in Colorado. I'm a former teacher. I taught for 10 years, so I have a small pension with them, And really, my wife and I don't have a lot saved up in our 401k. We've probably got a little less than $20,000. We haven't been great at saving, you know, because we, you know, paying for daycare. We have two kids and all the debt and all that stuff that kind of comes when you're, you know, just kind of starting out in life.
How old are you, Sean?
Right now, we're in our mid-30s, and we're starting to get serious about how we're going to, you know, pay the bills, get out of debt, and start making meaningful savings.
What is debt? When you say debt, describe the types of debt you have and how much.
Yeah, okay. So we have a house. We luckily bought it when the market wasn't crazy like it is right now in Colorado. So we owe about $300,000 on a house. We owe about $40,000 on cars. And then we have another probably six or seven in credit debt. So.
And how much are you saving in your 401ks?
Right now, my wife's company doesn't have a match, so she's not putting anything in. My company has a 5% match, so I'm putting that 5% to get the match, and really that's about it.
Okay.
And are your salaries roughly the same?
Yeah, roughly the same. I just got a promotion at work, and there's some potential for me to make more in the coming years, but right now we're both putting in roughly about $70,000 a year in salary. So.
How much?
$70,000 a year salary.
We're both
earning.
Oh, got it.
And yeah, you're saving roughly 2.5% of your income.
So let's just start let's start at the very beginning because you asked for our opinion and we'll give it to you. First of all, you have tons of time to save for a great retirement, right? Tons of time.
Okay.
So
You're mid-30s. If you're mid-40s, mid-50s, get some issues.
And, you know, we got the same phone call a couple weeks ago with a young person saying that they didn't put the money into their 401k because there wasn't a match, as if that match was the only reason you do it. You want to put the maximum your employer will allow you to put into your 401k. But to make it,
that'd be $18,000 a year, $36,000.
I understand. But to make it a little bit easier, we're going to do it in steps.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I want you to do is I want you to increase your contribution into your 401k to 10% of your pay.
Okay.
And I want your wife to do hers for 5% of pay.
That's just getting that would be 7.5% between the two of you because you make roughly the same.
Then a year from now, I want you to increase both of those by 5%. And a year after that, I want you to increase it to the maximum.
Well, if you can over the next 10 years – save 15% of your gross income towards retirement?
But Scott, I want them to get there within 2 years to 15%, not 10 years. They make $140,000.
Not taking 10 years to get there.
Okay.
What I'm saying is if over the next decade, if you and your wife make a... And I don't care about the credit cards. And the reason I say that is that I do care about them, but... I don't want that to be your number one focus.
Correct.
Because here's what I've seen. Textbook says, pay the credit cards off first, higher interest rate. What I've seen personally after doing this almost 30 years is that people will focus on paying off their debt, and a year later, they're still focusing on paying off their debt. And a year later after that, they're still focused on paying off their debt, and they're never saving right?
Yeah.
And then you never have anything saved for retirement.
So here's what you want to... You want to get your 401ks up to the maximum within 2 years. If you could do it within 6 months, better. But what we don't want you to do is to move to the maximum right away and say, I can't do this, and then you go back to zero. It's kind of like people that are on a weight loss, they go on big crash diets. It's probably better just to slowly change your behavior than it is to go on.
Fortunately, saving in your 401k is easier than weight loss programs. It is, smoking actually. Sensations, it is. A lot of other behavioral issues.
It is. So get that there.
And don't touch the 401k. Seriously, this is money for when you're old. And it's not that you necessarily save so you can retire young. Something might happen where you're forced to quit working.
Yeah.
Roughly 50% of Americans retire before they plan on it. Something... An external factor happens. A health issue is the number one issue, job change, et cetera. So, I mean, it's just about having some financial security in your life.
And so in there, we want you to put 100% of it in stocks.
You're 35. Mm-hmm. You have 30 years.
And 100% of it, 80% U.S. Stocks and 20% international stocks. And then you want to put get there the maximum as fast as you can. In terms of thinking on the other side is you've got 30 years to pay off your home, so you should be fine. I assume the interest rate is relatively low. In the future,
don't refinance the house. Don't listen to the ads about unleashing
the equity.
Don't
take any cash out of your house. You're always going to have a competing interest. Always, always, always have competing interest. Just pay your home off over time. Don't borrow to buy cars anymore. Save up and pay cash. Right?
Okay.
And you're going to say...
And right now,
what's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just drive your cars till they have 200,000 miles on it. You can easily drive a car. In fact, we just traded in a car, sold it, that my wife drove for 5 years. I have 4 children. Every one of them drove it until it would drive no more. Literally.
What'd you get for it? $3,000 or something?
Oh, less than $1,500. I actually drove it to the CarMax. I'm embarrassed. But the brakes went out on the way to the CarMax within the last 3/4 mile. So I had to use the e-brake to get it onto the lot. So when you say you could drive a car to the very end, I think we did. It's not ideal, right? It's not.
In all honesty, Pat, you drive... the car you drive on a daily basis is that. But when I was
what's that? Oh no, I drive my cars until.
But you're not driving an old jalopy.
No, well, I don't have to.
Correct. But when you were young, you did.
Oh my gosh, yes.
As did I.
Yes. Yeah, you could easily put 200,000 miles on a car, and it makes economic sense nowadays. So pay the car off. And drive it, and then
Sean has a question for us.
Oh,
we keep talking.
Oh, it's our show.
We're preaching,
but it's our show. Sean, you're just a guest here. Okay, what was your question for us?
My wife has always wondered, hey, do we need to pay like an advisor? I guess my wonder is since we are kind of so strapped and even increased.
You don't need to pay an advisor.
The percentages you said.
You don't.
Here's
need
the problem.
Wait till
here's
later,
the or, here's the challenge. I'll be real frank with you on the our industry, right? If there was some fee only, maybe like even an hourly billing or someone you could just pay like an annual retainer who would can sit down with and go through all this, that would be great. Unfortunately, those advisors are few and far between. And the reality is, I'm just being real blunt, the reality is a lot of good advisors, what ends up happening is they end up also managing people's money, and they find that from an economic standpoint, it's just much more lucrative for them to do that. So there's not that many people who devote themselves to working with people in their mid-30s. And those that tend to are often insurance agents.
Selling you whole life or universal life.
Insurance agents.
Yeah. So here's what... Now, speaking of insurance, you need to buy some life insurance on both you and your wife. $1 million. How old are your kids?
We have a newborn and a 5-year-old.
I'd get a 15 to 20-year level term.
Cheap term insurance.
$1 million each.
It's cheap unless you've got some major health
issues. And I'd explore disability insurance for both you and your wife, especially if it is an employer sponsored plan.
Okay.
So do all those things.
And call us in a year or something.
Yeah, call us in
call
a year.
Call us every
too.
Year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, truly. You can call us every year.
Cool.
It's not that hard. It isn't that hard. An advisor isn't going to add any more value than what we just did. It's the discipline to do it.
It's the discipline.
Most of life is discipline, right? Most of success.
And the thing we like
discipline.
About the 401k, and you mentioned that your wife's company doesn't have a match. What we love about the 401k is the fact that money is sucked out of your paycheck before you have a chance to spend it, because there are always competing needs, particularly when you got 2 young kids, right? I mean, they need new shoes and new jackets, and they've got tumbling class and whatever, all this 5-year-old stuff that happens.
That's right.
Right? And it's never ending. And the cute little outfit for the newborn and all, it goes on and on and on. And so it's really easy to, and most Americans spend whatever comes to the checkbook. That's a little bit more, frankly. And the key is the thing about the 401k, we've seen people get to retirement that weren't the best when it came to having discipline in their own finances. They'd always, right, Pat, you've seen it 100 times.
Yeah.
They've always had loans on their cars. They still have some credit card debt, but they've got a big fat 401k balance.
Yeah, and they're okay.
Yeah, they're okay.
Yeah, they're okay.
It's not the ideal situation, but it's pretty dang close.
Yeah. So appreciate the call. Good luck, Sean.
Yeah, good
hey,
luck,
thank
Sean.
You guys.
Congrats on the new baby.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fun time in life.
Yeah.
Hard work, heavy labor time in life. 5-year-old and a newborn.
Yeah, I just went out to dinner with two of my boys last night. The oldest one just moved from Denver back to Sacramento. And it was, I hadn't, just the two of them, they're quite funny.
It's together. Like the best, I think, when your kids are like out of college or like they start appreciating it and they actually enjoy hanging out with you like they did when they were eight.
Yeah, and they're kind of funny. You know what will be the best is when I go to dinner with them and one of them reaches for the check.
Good luck on
that. Actually, they always offer to. The younger one does because he still has a household credit card. I'm like, that's not the same thing.
I'm buying, Dad.
You putting it on my credit card is not you buying dinner.
Oh, my. All right. 1-888-2-HANSON to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Northern California with Patty. Patty, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. First-time caller, but long-time listener.
Oh, great.
My question is, my husband and I are fortunate to be pretty financially secure. I was able to semi-retire at 59.
Did you win the lottery, inherit money, or was it a result of your disciplined savings over the years?
Not a good saver, but long time government employee.
Okay.
long time.
Okay.
So I have a good pension from the government.
Okay.
My husband's going to retire next year at 65. So my question is, we live in a big old house, two-story. I want to downsize, but I'm not sure buying another house at this stage of my life is the best step to take.
Are you going to live in the same area? Are you moving out of state or a long distance away? You're going to live within the local area.
So you're in
the same town.
And you're in Woodland, which is kind of a farming community outside of Sacramento. Actually, it was. Now it's kind of a bedroom community.
Now it's like an Amazon warehouse.
Exactly. It's grown quite a bit over the years. So if you were 85 and asked this question, we'd probably say it would drill a little deeper and kind of determine. But I assume you're in your early 60s?
How old are you now?
I'll be 63 this year.
Okay, early 60s. Odds are, so you'd look at a couple that's, do you take a 65-year-old couple today? And there's a greater than 50% chance that at least one of them will be alive in their 90s.
So that's two 65-year-olds.
Okay, you're about there. Chance. So we've got 25 years to go.
So, which tells us that you should buy a house. And you shouldn't even worry about the market price of the house at this point in time because it's a lateral move.
Is your home paid for now, or do you have a mortgage on it?
We have a mortgage. We have a lot of equity in the home because we've been there quite a while.
Yeah.
And if you downside, would it be a lesser-priced home?
Well, in this market, it's probably going to be close to what the home, well, maybe $100,000 less than what we could get out of our home.
But
we have a two-story, so I'm primarily looking for something smaller and a one-story.
Yes. Right.
So the one thing we would caution you is this. In this type of a marketplace, creates some problems, is what you want to sell your home first and then buy a new home.
As much of a pain that might be.
Some people, what they do is they buy a new home and then hope to sell their old home. And the market can change on a dime.
I mean, unless you do it on a contingency, and then you're willing to let the deal blow apart.
Correct.
The challenge with home purchases, they become so emotional. People look at a house, they fall in love with it, they think they lay in bed at night dreaming about their new house, and any of the financial rationale goes out the window.
And you shouldn't worry about the price because what you sell it for, because it's going to be pretty much a lateral move, right, around the same price in the same geography, they'll both will have a tendency to move in tandem, everything else being equal. They'll move in tandem. So if your house goes up by $100,000, the house you're buying will probably go up by about $100,000, and the inverse is true.
And Patty, here's why we think it's important to own a home and not rent. Inflation, right? So if you know anyone who rents, if you have a family member or a friend that is rents, you know how much rent has gone up the last decade even. So the challenge...
Especially in California.
Right. And you're planning on staying in California. So the challenge is if you go and rent, which is kind of it's somewhat tempting, right? Like, it'd be great if you had, anytime you have a problem, you just call the landlord. Hey, there's a leak in the roof. Hey, the water heater's out. Hey, the stovetop. All the stuff that happens with a house, right? Which is a pain, which I'm assuming you would probably be looking at a newer one-story home or something that's a little more updated so you don't have as much upkeep, too, which would be wonderful. But the challenge is if you're renting and your $2,000 rent goes to $3,000,
to $5,000, $7,000, and you think $7,000, well, it happened in New York. It happened in the San Francisco Bay Area.
If we go through a time
of parts of Denver,
we go through a time of high inflation, which we have had periods like that in the past. That is the biggest danger for any retiree is inflation. And the number, if you're renting, that by far is your number one expense.
What you want to do is rent a house right before they implement rent control in that area.
Yeah, well, I guess there's that.
All righty.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
All right, Patty. Glad you called. Bye. Yeah, and I'm glad. It's always good to have longtime listeners, first-time callers. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number, 1-888-2-HANSON.
So speaking of renting, our theory is pretty close to accurate, unless there is rent control. I read an article 2 weeks ago about a 96-year-old that's lived in the same apartment in New York City in a rent-controlled area for over 60 years.
Wow. What was the rent?
It was like $700.
Yeah, they're allowed for 2% increase a year or something.
Yeah,
like that.
He was complaining. He said, you know, they don't do many improvements around here, but I get it.
Yeah. Oh, that's what he said?
Yeah.
Well, my wife's grandma lived in the same place in San Francisco for like, I don't know, 35 years, rent control. And it was, she paid like $700 a month or something like that. And it was 2-bedroom, big, you know, spacious, nice entry, beautiful building. And she would always complain that they're not doing that. Her neighbor's apartment's all upgraded. Hers was things, you know.
Well, you know, when my wife and I first got married, we were living in a place and a little duplex, a condo, and it needed paint. So my wife said, well, we'll just have them paint it. I go, oh, no. They haven't raised the rent in 2.5 years. We're not going to ask them to paint it. So I called the landlord and said, if I paint this place, will you pay for the paint? And he said, oh, that's the greatest.
Right.
Right?
Right. And so then what happened when that landlord was talking about rent increases? Oh, don't increase the McLeans. They're great tenants.
Yeah. Just tried to leave them alone.
I mean, Pat, how many times is financial? So we're practicing financial advisors. We've been doing this almost 30 years. We've got thousands of households as clients, right?
Yeah.
Many of them, not all, but the minority, own rental properties, right?
Not unusual.
Okay, here's very common. And most of our clients are kind of retirement stage or retire. We specialize in helping people transition through retirement, and that's what all our advisors do in all of our offices. And so how many times have you sat with a client and talked to them, you're going through their assets, doing some financial planning, talking about some rental, and they say, here's the value of the home, here's what it's renting for. And you say, that seems a little low.
The economics aren't there.
That seems a little like low rent. And their response is?
They are such a cute little couple. We love them.
They've been such great tenants for so many years.
And we're not going to, you know what, Pat? Scott, almost verbatim, about 7 weeks ago.
Pat and I did not have this discussion before the show, by the way. We've heard this 100 times.
Yeah, almost verbatim. You know, if they ever decide to leave, then I'll sell it. And the husband, that's the wife, and the husband says, yeah, I know, it makes no sense, does it, Pat? I said, well, you are getting a return of 1.5%, which is less than that if you put it in a short-term bond fund. But you get all those headaches that come around with owning a rental as well. So I said, the only reason you'd continue to own this is if you believe that price appreciation is going to continue. And the further you get into price appreciation, the less it is. And at the end of it, she said, well, we're not even going to talk. The wife said, well, we can't even talk about it, Pat. There's no way I could throw them out. I said, well, it's not like you're throwing them out. There's other alternatives. You're not the only rental.
That is it's a funny thing with rental properties. And rentals can be a great diversification tool for retirement, could provide great retirement income. The challenge is oftentimes we're all human.
Oh, Scott.
Right? And we fall in love with people, and we fall in love with the people who rent our homes sometimes. And got him some special breaks.
During the recession, a not a great friend, but a friend of mine came to me and said, you know, we lost our house. Is there any way you want to buy our house from the secondary market and rent it back to me. And I said, I couldn't do that. And he said, why not? I said, because I'd never be able to evict you. I like you. I know you. He said, why would you evict me? I said, I actually don't know why I would evict you, but there might be a point in time where it makes economic sense for me to evict you if you quit paying the rent.
So continue to live in your car. By the way, you can park at my driveway. Good luck to you.
Well, he had a job. Okay. He was just trying to... It's not like he was unemployed. He just he was upside down in his house, and the government was encouraging people to surrender their homes.
All right. Well, we're taking a quick break here. We'll be back and continue with calls. 1-888-2-Hanson's the number. By the way, if you haven't met with a financial advisor in a while, if you're a couple years away from retirement, we see great benefit of meeting with a qualified financial advisor. Right? And, of course, Hanson McLean's got – we think we've got some great advisors, but there's also some great independent advisors. The key is work with an independent advisor, one who's a fiduciary, not one who's tied to selling your products. We believe that makes a big difference. So anyway, if you want to join the program, 1-888-2-Hanson is the number. You're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean's Money Matters.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking around for more of Hanson McLean. And I mentioned as we're going on the break the importance of working with a fiduciary advisor. What's interesting is every year more and more advisors are leaving the big Wall Street firms.
Yes.
So last year was another record year. This article says it was a banner year for brokers and advisors leaving the Wall Street wirehouses.
They're not Wall Street firms anymore. Most of them are bank firms. They call them Wall Street firms, but they're not Wall Street firms.
Because they're owned by banks.
But they're owned by banks. I had lunch with a person that was, they call it a Wall Street firm, but it's really a bank firm because it's owned by a bank.
Right.
He was telling me what they do. And I'm like, wow. Like, wow. Like, how their compensation is structured, referrals back into the bank system.
Oh, they have to refer. If you're a broker at Merrill Lynch or one of those.
Well, or Wachovia or whatever,
does Wachovia
right?
still exist? I can't remember who's who anymore. What's, JP
Morgan. Oh, Wachovia is Wells Fargo advisors.
Wells Fargo?
Now. Yeah.
Most of these advisors have, they have a quota of people, of referrals to within the bank channel.
Have to.
Credit cards, checking accounts, loans.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, they get penalized on their pay, which is why we think it's so important to work with someone who's independent, someone who doesn't manufacture products, someone when you're sitting at the table doing some financial planning, you don't have to worry about that financial planner looking at you and thinking, I wonder if I could recommend this person to some other division within our organization so we get paid again.
What the way the economic system works in capitalization of U.S. companies right now through the issues of stocks and bonds. 10 years from now will look so much different than it is today. It will look significantly different than it is today. Where now, if you were taking a company public, you go to all these big Wall Street / bank firms and you say, I need to issue some stock.
So that is changing. Yes.
Right? And then they say, okay, we're going to sell X amount or we got to issue some bonds.
Firms.
And then they go to the brokerage firms and they do the distribution, which leaves investment advisors like us out, which we're fine with. But that distribution system won't be the same in 10 years from now. It will look radically different. We'll look back at this, how capital was moved through the markets from individual investors up to companies 10 years from now and think, why did we do it that way? Why did the system allow for that? Why was there so many conflicts of interest?
Well, you're hoping that's where we're going to be 10 years from now.
Okay. That might be a bit of...
You're hoping there's less conflicts of interest going forward.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough.
All right. So that's why working with an independent firm is key. Let's go to the calls here. 1-888-2-Hanson. Let's talk with Maria. Maria, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, good morning, and thank you.
Thank you.
So my question was that... my husband has a universal life insurance policy that's supposed to, I guess, renew or something at 70 and a half. He's now 71 and retired, so we were wondering if we should surrender it and get the cash value, or
So when you said renew, did someone from the insurance company contact you?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. So it doesn't have to do anything. So there's no time limit on these.
Unless there was some
sort of guarantees in there, but I doubt it on a universal life policy.
What did you think had to happen at age 70?
That they would increase the
The premium, the plan premium.
Got it. So how much cash? How much cash value is inside the policy?
I'm thinking about $43,000, $44,000.
And how much is the death benefit?
How much is $100,000?
So here's the
and is it? How long have you owned it?
About 18, 20 years.
Okay, so it's out of surrender.
Here's what happened years. So there's a lot of people in your position, Maria, where people had this universal life policy, thought they were going to pay a certain number of years and then have this insurance in place forever, right? And now we get to a point later in life. It's like, wait a minute, the insurance company is telling me if I want to keep this thing in force till my till I lived 100, I'm going to have to increase my premium payments. Is that what's happening?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and a lot of it is because they were based upon high interest rate assumptions, and as interest rates have went down, two things have happened. One is the interest you get paid on the $43,000 has decreased, but two, it's the insurance companies, their own portfolios are earning less than they had projected because they also have to invest in a low interest rate environment.
So there, so it's caused the cost of insurance to go up. So is your husband in good health or is he in poor health? Tell us a little bit about his health.
Medium. I mean, he's not in excellent health, you know, but he's not exactly declining. So there's a few health issues, and I think that's why we got the universal.
Do you need the need the money, the $43,000? Not do you, would you like it? Do you need it? Do you need extra money on a monthly basis to live a comfortable lifestyle?
There are other sources that we could use.
And if you did not make any premium payments, how long would this policy last?
Again, I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. I'm without thinking looking, they'll soon.
I'd lower the face value of it.
I don't know. I would want to. Here's the thing. You need to look at it. To actually do the right thing, you should probably have your husband apply for like a $100,000 10-year term life insurance policy.
And see what it comes in.
See what it comes in. If he's denied or if it's rated or if he gets the standard policy, that tells you what the insurance company, that tells you what statistical chance of his life expectancy.
Oh, and here's the thing. When we got this one, we initially applied for a term life insurance company. He was denied. And so then the agent said, let's just get a universal, which is less strict about, you know, these things, so that he at least has something in place.
But here's what we need to, from
I'm
a financial...
thinking if we approve... Oh,
yeah, no, don't apologize, please. From a financial standpoint, I think here's what we need to look at. I mean, this is, I'm just being real blunt here. We need to look at what's the best use of this $43,000. Is it, in fact, to take it out of this life insurance, invest it somewhere, and let it grow to something in the future, or do we have a higher internal return, a return on our money, if we leave it in and perhaps even continue to throw some premium payments at it?
Or you split the difference and you lower the face value to $50,000 or $60,000 and you don't put any more money and let it pay for itself. And then you're splitting the difference. And then when you do that, the insurance company is going to contact you and tell you, you know, you turn this into a modified endowment contract.
There's no gain in this thing.
You don't care. I would be, rather than go through all that, Scott, I got to, because Maria, you don't want to pour any more money into this.
What do you have in other assets? 401k, IRAs, home?
Yeah.
Do you have other stuff?
No, that's it. Oh, there's some stock investments.
Like how much?
And do you have pension income? I mean, how are you putting food on the table?
I'm working, and he has the RMD.
How big is his IRA that he's taking his RMD out of?
I'm thinking about $250. So not much.
Yeah. I'd lower the face value.
So the simplest thing, if you just want to, like, get this problem solved, would be to contact the insurance company.
tell them that you want to lower the life insurance amount from $100,000 to maybe $60,000.
Yeah, I'd do that.
That's the beautiful thing about this. You can lower it, and when you do that, that $43,000 you have in there, that earns interest each month, and then the term insurance, essentially, it's, think of it like a term insurance internally, that it's the difference between the cash you have, the $43,000, and whatever the death benefit is.
So if you lower the face value to $60,000.
That's the amount of paid upon on death.
Paid upon on death. What you're really buying is only $17,000 worth of life insurance.
Right now you're buying
$57,000. Does that make sense? Because if he were to pass away, they're going to give you a check for $60,000. $43,000 of it, which you could get anyway today. So what you're doing by lowering the face value to $60,000 is you're making it so that the policy won't run out, it won't use up its cash value, and you won't have to put any more money into it.
Oh, okay.
But you still have the ability to get at that $43,000 if need be.
It's the same policy. You're not buying a new policy. So our concern in having you go talk to somebody is they try to sell you something.
Yeah,
new,
well, she's not going to buy anything from anyone, right? You're going to promise us that, right, Maria?
Somebody has told me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like a replacement policy.
Yeah, we're not doing any of that. We don't have a dog in this fight other than to help you. So just lower the face value to $60,000. Call it a day. They try to come to your house. They try to get you on the phone to talk about all the bad things that's going to happen. Just tell them to forget it. They're going to tell you, you can't do this. It's going to turn into a modified endowment contract.
Which you don't care.
And you don't care. They're right. Okay. It's going to turn into a modified endowment contract.
To you.
But it doesn't matter to you.
We can get into the nitty gritty, but it's not going to make a difference. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So just lower the face value to $60,000 and call it a day. All righty?
Okay. Thank you very much.
I appreciate your call.
Good luck. There are so many people in situations just like this because they bought these universal life policies in the 90s. Then on these projections, the interest rates were going to be higher. Now interest rates are much lower.
And it didn't turn out.
And you're getting here, they're at age 70, suddenly getting an increase. They thought the policy would be paid off. Oh, not only is it not paid off, you're going to have to throw in more money to keep this thing.
To keep it in force.
Otherwise, what would happen is that $43,000 would be shrinking year after year after year until the point where there's no money left in it.
And then if the policy lapses before he dies, then there's no.
Zero, yeah.
Yeah. Good times. It's fun talking about life insurance, isn't it? They're complicated.
Oh.
It's complicated. And to really, you know, we could do analysis on it all day long. But a large part of it depends on what the other financial situation in the household looks like. And we weren't getting a lot out of Maria there.
No. Well, it's hard. I almost said, I don't know how we're going to make this. That's why I think we came to the conclusion the simplest thing would be to do this.
Yeah.
And let's continue on with calls. We're talking with Scott. Scott, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, good afternoon, or good morning. I have a question. Getting ready to look at perhaps retiring here in the next year, and have been pretty conservative. Our house is paid off. We're all pretty much 401k. The pensions amounts are small. And we have a second home we're partners in up in the Tahoe area, and it's got a small loan amount on it that we're partners in, about $135,000. And so and then I've got another boat that we bought just before the tax law changes, and we owe about $175,000 on that. But the idea on that was we were going to use it for about 5 years and sell it and treat it more as a rental versus using our own cash. But what we're trying to decide is
Scott, slow down. So your primary residence, it's almost paid off.
It is paid off.
You have so the primary is paid off. You have a second house and you're in partnership, and you owe $135,000, and the other part owes $135,000. What's your liability there? Is it half of the $135,000 or is it?
Yeah, half of the $135,000.
Okay. And then you own, did you say it was a boat?
Yes.
And you owe $175,000 on a boat?
Correct.
What kind of boat, just out of curiosity, what kind of boat is this? This sounds nice.
It's a cruiser. It's a cruiser where you cruise up in Canada in the Northwest and Alaska.
It's a motor yacht.
Self-contained. Yeah. It's a pocket yacht.
Got it. So it's, how just out of curiosity, how long is this thing?
32.
Oh, all right.
And did you buy that new?
Bought it brand new, bought it three months before the tax law changes. And part of the equation was kind of figuring out the tax benefits of being able to take some of the deductions on the interest.
It's minimal. And I mean, the overall scheme of things, that's a
okay, so minimal. What's your question for us?
Well, our question is, should we pay off that second home up in Tahoe, and then I'm assuming we would want to keep our cash and pay the boat loan, because being on 401ks, if I retire, I'm not going to be able to qualify for new loans very easily, I wouldn't think, because I don't have any.
So where would the money come from to pay off the...
Yeah, what do you have in savings, 401k?
Yeah, about $2 million in 401ks combined through my wife and I, and we got about $475 in liquid assets in a brokerage account.
And how are those dollars in the brokerage account invested?
Cash is about $200, and then the rest is in some mutual funds and then some of the stock that I get from my company is my incentive comp.
And what's,
they'll vest each.
What's the interest rate on the boat?
4.25%.
And what's the interest rate on the home in Tahoe?
4.25%.
Yeah, so the thing, the concept of having a loan on a depreciating asset, it goes against my, I know that a lot of people finance boats, and it always just bothers me. Like, why would you finance a boat that's going to depreciate in value?
In his financial situation, it doesn't really much matter.
No,
it's just pledged collateral, and the cost of money was the same.
I understand.
So I know it bothers you.
I understand.
What bothers you more than anything, I think, Scott, is people
can't afford
it.
So you got a good point. Most of the people we see that have loans on the boat, they really can't afford the boat.
They shouldn't have owned a boat.
And I know what they're going to look like when they're
But
when
you're
they're
not
old.
In that situation. So the question is, should you pay these things down? And the answer...
How old are you?
58.
Yeah, the answer is yes. You should probably pay down because you have $200,000 in cash. And that cash is not earning 4.25%. And so if you think about it this way, which is it's just the timing of taking that cash and paying off these loans that we're really discussing about. Because once you retire, there's not new money coming into the earned income coming into the household. It's only assets that are either going to produce income or use principal to pay down. Correct?
Right.
So I would look at that, paying that off.
And what of them?
I would probably...
I don't think I'd be in a hurry to pay off the Tahoe house.
That's part of it is because you're 50% partner in there, and unless the other partner decides that they want to pay off that amount too, you're going to run into a little bit of an accounting situation.
And imagine you have a fixed rate mortgage for the next 25
Correct.
Plus years, right?
Yeah, it's probably got about 15 left.
And how long is that a fixed rate on the boat as well?
Correct.
Yeah, I would pay the boat off.
Yeah, I would too.
Because the cost of money is the same on both. It's going to get rid of that payment.
And then whatever your payment was, make sure you save that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And enjoy the boat.
All right. Well, that's helpful. I appreciate the perspective.
Yeah. So all right, good.
Appreciate the call.
All right.
All right, good luck, Scott. Good. Thanks.
Boat, bring over another 1,000. That's what it stands for.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking he's got a pretty expensive lifestyle with a cabin up in the mountains.
Yeah,
and a big cabin cruiser boat.
The Northwest. But yeah. Hey, good for him.
Yeah. The challenge is sometimes, here's a challenge we see sometimes. People in their 50s, kids are now gone. And this may or may not be the last caller, so I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
But kids are now gone. And so we've got more disposable incomes because we don't have the money going out to the kids. And you tend to be at the highest point of your career.
So you have lifestyle ratchet, and your lifestyle's ratcheting up. Your cost of lifestyle is going up.
Yes, and so now it's like, a lifestyle that you had when you're 50 might have been easily replaced
when you're
in
60.
Retirement. But now we just see it sometimes. People end up with this lifestyle creep. Used to taking a couple of European trips a year or whatever it might be. That now it's like, before we needed $1 million for retirement. Now we need $4 million
well,
for retirement.
And he looked at that $2 million, but the reality is that $2 million may or may not be a lot of money, relative to what his income was.
Yeah, we didn't never got to that.
We never got to that. It's, he just asked us a question. But so people will come to our office and say, how much money do I need to retire? I'm like, no idea. I don't know anything about you. So let me ask some questions. What are you living on now? And then that's where you start to determine whether you have.
What are you truly living on?
Yeah. Because you could have $10 million. But if you're Paris Hilton, that's not enough to retire on. Or you could have $50 million if you're, you know.
$50 million would be, come on. $50 million might be plenty for Paris Hilton. Not anybody. I don't know
about Paris Hilton. I've never spent any time with Paris Hilton.
Paris Hilton. For some, $2 million would be my
more than enough.
But if you even look at a save of 4%, kind of 4% withdrawal, 80, that's 80 000, grand a year.
80 grand a year.
It's not a ton of money.
Yeah. So the amount of money you need to retire is relative to what you're living on today.
Yeah, your lifestyle. And what debt you might have.
Yeah, not necessarily the dollar amount, but everything is relative.
We're in Colorado with Susie. Susie, you're with Scott Hansen and Pat McLean.
Basically, my question is, I've been with the federal government now for 32 years. I'm set to retire. And I'm looking at what to do with the TSP fund. And the more I talk to people, they say, well, you get a pension, you're going to draw Social Security. So why would you want to take that out of TSP where it's performed so well for the last 30 years and turn it over to a retirement investor or fiduciary or something to where it, you know, they charge you fees and it's more guaranteed and diversified, but it did well for you when it was in the TSP fund.
Those are great points. So do you expect that you're going to be taking distributions from the Thrift Savings Plan?
I'm sorry, if I'm going to what?
Take distributions from
any
income anytime soon.
Probably seldom, you know, when I travel, say maybe twice a year, something to that, but not as a regular income.
And what's the value of the TSP?
It's at about $1.25 million.
And how do you have it allocated?
I'm sorry, allocated?
Yeah, like how do you have the investments spread out?
Oh, right now?
Yeah.
60 C fund and 40 S.
And so 60 is the C fund is the equity fund, is that correct?
S&P 500, yeah.
Okay, and what was the other fund? 40% is into the...
S, 40 in the S and...
And the S is the bond fund?
I believe so, yes.
So here, from a pure cost standpoint, totally agree with what some of the other people have said. You could build a portfolio yourself with probably at least the same cost, maybe even lower cost today. Go to a no-load fund, use ETFs, and have greater diversification, more options, and lower fees than the TSP. If you are highly confident in your ability to pick the proper investments and the kind of right kind of financial planning on how to time the best kind of distributions. You know, and then what do we deal with required minimum distributions and how do we deal with that prior to that point? I got to tell you, if you were my sister, I would say, sister, come with $1.2 million, get a financial advisor.
You get a good financial advisor. And the reality is.
I mean, really, you could afford it too. Now you've got someone on got your back and help you with the tax planning and everything else.
But the reality is. The weird thing about the Thrift Savings Plan, the federal government's Thrift Savings Plan, is the lack of choices that they actually give you.
What, is there five?
Yes. Right. Well, they've added a lot of, like, L50, where they just kind of split it up for you based on your risk tolerance between those five. But,
correct.
CISL.
I got to tell you this much.
I was going to make a point. The Department of Labor, we have a 401k division in our company where we actually – have 401k services.
This is weird. I know where you're going with this. This is odd.
For companies that employers. So we do credit unions have their thing and doctor's offices and lawyer's offices. If the Department of Labor came in and audited one of our plans and all we had was five choices, they would fine us. They would say, you can't put together a portfolio.
I don't know what would happen, but the best practice would certainly say you need more than five options.
All right, maybe they wouldn't find us, but it most certainly wouldn't be the industry's norm to only give five options.
And the CFO, okay, whoever it is at the company that is the fiduciary and the plan, would say, I want more.
Need more options.
Yeah.
So there isn't anything wrong with the plan you have other than it has an incredible lack of options.
Diversification.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you own the S&P 500, which is great, but what about the total stock market index, which is
even broader, and you get mid and small cap exposure on there. And what in the bond side, why is it only one bond fund? What happens if we want to shorten the maturities on the bonds? It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Why it's so limited?
When the industry norm is more choices.
No companies have this.
None. So although you've done well and cost is a factor, I don't think it's the only factor. And it doesn't matter. You know, you could have had it in any portfolio with a 60-40 allocation over
the
last.
You had
the
same performance.
And would have had the same performance. In fact,
It's not special that it's a government plan.
Correct. If you had actually broader diversification, there's a good chance you would actually have better performance than you have historically. Okay. So go and talk
to... The key, as you said, it's a good financial advisor, someone who's a fiduciary, a fee-based advisor,
okay,
and just certified financial planner, someone can help you with the overall planning at the same time. I think you, with the right relationship, I think you would benefit from it.
Yeah, but there's...
Okay.
I really do. If you're my sister, I'd say...
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you have the money, then you might as well invest it into somebody that has the knowledge.
Correct.
Yeah, and the bigger thing is what... We got to this point. What about when the future? What when the next downturn comes? And right, you know, how are you going to navigate through that? And many people benefit from having a relationship with a good financial advisor, someone they trust, someone they believe that has their best interest at heart, and not someone who's selling a product, but someone who's a fiduciary
with a fee base. So appreciate the call.
Fee based fiduciary.
Yes, correct. And congratulations on the retirement.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for the advice.
Thanks, Susan. Well, that is all the time we have. I want to remind our listeners, I'll actually let you guys know, we've got some educational workshops, Social Security workshops, coming up in the Sacramento region the week of March 12th, in the Denver region the week of March 12th as well, and in the Bay Area the week of March 19th. Go to HansonMcLean.com for full information and to register. They do tend to fill up. So it's all about Social Security. In March, you'll want to make reservations for that. HansonMcLean.com. We'll see you next week. This has been Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.